So I am extremely excited to have Liz O'Day on with us. Liz is the CEO and founder of Alaris. And so we met, I think, at a Global Leadership Institute thing or something for the Irish Council of Boston. I'm trying to think of when we met, but I just remember having a great conversation with you about both what you were doing. I think you were probably, you're about 6 years into the company now, right? I think maybe we met when you were about 3 years in, something like that. And just being fascinated by what you do and sort of what you're taking on and all of the things you do. And I actually just saw that you were named a 40 under 40 in the Boston Business Journal. So congratulations on that. Yeah. It brought up a little jealousy in our household. My wife won one of those and I didn't.
Kudos to your wife. I like
that's
her.
That's right. But we were on the same in the same company at the time, and we're still, and she does a lot with Amplified as well, so we're lucky to have her on board.
That's awesome.
But I did get a little jealous, but that's a great honor. And so I'm really excited to have you here, just to sort of know you a little bit personally. I'm fascinated by what you do, and also about some of the nonprofit that you started up, and some of the global and national coalitions that you co-chair and that you're on. So I'm really excited to have you here. And today I'd love to just talk a little bit about sort of some of the things that you've gone through and some of the things you noticed. And, you know, one thing that as I thought about it, when we first met, I think, you know, you were smaller as a company than you are now. And certainly over, I think, the last 3 years, you've grown. And I know I'd love to talk with you a little bit kind of what that transition has been like from, I think it's clear that you're a leader in a bunch of areas. And obviously you're the leader of this company. And yet probably when you started it, we're doing a lot of the science, a lot of the things that, you know, you were doing the day in, day out of as well. What has that transition been like from sort of doing all of that to developing a team and to growing that company?
Well, first, thank you for having me, Chad. I'm thrilled to get the chance to sort of chat with you. And yeah, I think we met at some Irish galas, probably sharing a few Guinnesses or something like that, you know, so I look forward to when we can do that again shortly. But yeah, so maybe just taking a step back and kind of giving a company overview. You know, I started Alaris about 6 years ago, directly as a spin-out from my PhD at Harvard. I was a joint student studying biophysics and cancer biology, and working in the lab was honestly the only job I had ever had prior to that, right? And as part of my thesis, I developed this platform to be able to identify signatures that can help us figure out why some people benefit from a drug and why some people do not, which if we've all probably experienced this with some loved one we know, right, where, you know, unfortunately, if they get a disease diagnosis, you know, the doctors will do their best to identify a good treatment for them. But because patients are different, it might work for one patient and it might not work for another. And as a super background, my older brother had cancer when we were kids. He's fine. But like I lived that, right, where like they our family spent 2 years in Children's Hospital, and, you know, I was told to hope and pray, you know, that the drugs would work, and good Lord, I did. But that's what motivated me to become a scientist, and spent, you know, the majority of my waking hours after that in a lab or in a library or buried in a book trying to develop technology to try to solve that problem. And when I finished my PhD, I just felt that in my bones, I had something that, like, maybe not necessarily the full solution, but that could add insight to this, what we call it the drug treatment problem. And I think I was probably blessed with a little naivety and that I didn't really know what I was doing. And so decided to start a biotech company. And like, it is, looking back on it, it is wild and crazy to think that like decision, you know, happened. I barely knew what biotech was. Had zero connections, and certainly like less than that in terms of like access to capital. Right. But I would say just like truly, you know, I often say every like GCAT base pair in my DNA, I just like felt like I'd be pissed at myself if I didn't give this a go. So like, let's give it a go. But giving it a go when you're a first time female scientist entrepreneur with zero connections is a challenge, right? So I had to set up the company, try to get funding, and, you know, try to do the science as well. So for the first 3.5-ish years, I was the only employee, right? So, you know, I had great consultants and some interns and advisors helping me. So I don't want to make it seem like I was on my own, because I definitely had an incredible support system, but was running around, right? Like I would run to the lab in the morning, get a bunch of experiments set up and cooking. Then I'd go off to have meetings with investors or meetings with partners about what we might be able to do together. And then back to the lab and then back. And so it was wild and crazy when I think back of those like early days. But step by step, like we built critical mass and demonstrated, you know, like both the power of our technology and the business model that was there. And so was able to sort of bring on, you know, more funding and use that to hire first employees and then second employees and third. And now we're up to, I think we're up to, I just hired one this week. So I think we're at 15 right now. Right.
Oh, nice. So, that's great. That must be kind of an exciting ride as you're doing that. And what has that process been like? So it sounds like obviously you've always had a passion for this. When you're developing your team, obviously you're looking for people who are capable and know what they're doing and know the science. Is that passion something that you're also sort of trying to look for, or like how do you go to make sure? I think probably when you go from from one to two to three, it's kind of maybe an easier transition because you're still sort of really. But as you're getting to 10 and 15, and now you are still certainly leading the company. And yet it's taking on some of it's probably its own culture. You know, how do you both hire for that and manage that?
I'm not sure I've figured it out, but it is something that I take super seriously. So just as much time as I have spent on the science, I now spend on the business. So I read, you know, every book about how to grow a good company, how to be a good CEO and a leader. Hard Things About Hard Things is one of my favorite books. The Culture Code, I read recently, the story of Netflix, just to try to draw insights from people who have been here before so that, again, I can learn from them. And one of the lessons that I took from all of those books and classes and MBA classes that I've now taken is I think like you have to be deliberate in setting your culture. Otherwise, like, you know, it'll set itself. And so we early on, like with my first couple employees, went together and did like this core value setting session where we said, all right, let's go around the table. And I gave everybody like postcards or something and was like, why did you take this job at Alaris? And like, what do you think like makes Alaris special? And what's Alaris always going to be? And what's like Alaris like never going to be? And it let us set three core values, which to this day influence every one of my hiring, my firing, my business transaction, like decisions around it. And they are first that we are first and foremost, like accountable to science, right? Science is what brought me here. Science is like what guides us. So, you know, you've been in the biotech space. Sometimes yep. Great science happens. Sometimes great science doesn't happen. And Alaris will always be on the side of great and true science. The second one is always strive for better. So, you know, I think everybody on my team is a rock star and adds something to the table. But humility is a big part of our company and our culture. And if you're not willing to kind of try to improve yourself, and then that in turn improves the company, then you know, again, that's how we kind of judge people. But the third one gets to your point about passion is we are looking for people who are mind, body, and soul committed to revolutionary impact. Is that core third value of revolutionary impact? Because what I tell people on their very first day is there are lots of other jobs out there that probably would pay you more and be less stressful than working at a startup. But you have the chance to do something amazing. So if you're willing to put that in, you know, I'm going to support you and work with you on that.
Yeah. Well, I think those are great core values. And I think it's funny when we work with companies, you know, we tend to look for the people who are passionate about making their teams better and that believe in the process as well. Because certainly we were talking with one interviewee recently about how some people kind of hire us to sort of check off the box, and that, you know, we work with those companies for sure. But there's something about the people that are, they're doing it to be better, to become better. When they have that passion, it's so much more effective than if they're just sort of, all right, well, we should probably do some training. This one seems more fun than another one, so let's do it, rather than let's try to see how we can incorporate to be better. That's great. One thing, you know, I've noticed and sort of, you know, talking with people who I know in biotech world and just in science, that it's such an interesting culture that I think, or at least is my take on it, that sometimes in the past people would sort of hold on to their ideas and hold on to their data and hold on to their, you know, rather than sort of sharing it to become better. And it seems like your core values even kind of get at the idea of that the humility of putting stuff out there and of working off each other and of learning from maybe a mistake or a success. Obviously, it seems like maybe that your company is espousing it. Do you see that as a shift overall in biotech, or?
I hope so. So in biotech, especially in companies that are developing products, therapeutics, or diagnostics, you know, I think traditionally there's been a lack of trust in the industry, and that could be sort of tied to this, that
right.
The original like desire to keep things closed and how it works. But I do see sort of a shift where there's now enough critical mass where people are demanding to know how or why things were done. And so so I'm hopeful that we're going to start to kind of move in that direction, because, you know, the opportunities that biotech affords, like the COVID vaccine as an example, right, to change and improve society are tremendous. But if you're not like transparent about how it works, how it doesn't work, and you only push hype, you know, I think that does a disservice to everybody, right? You know,
yeah.
So Alaris really tries. We publish all the time. We present at every conference. I think I often say, and I believe it's true, I'm our biggest champion, but I am certainly our biggest critic. Like, if you ever see me give a talk, you know, people are like, oh, that's wonderful. And I'll be like, yeah, but we also need to do this and that, you know, so.
Well, we would probably just encourage you to say yes, and we need to keep on going.
That's right. The true improv style there. Yes.
That's yes, right. And. Oh, that's great, though. When you think of, you know, leading that team, what do you see as success? I mean, both within the team and also sort of as you grow, because it seems like now with what you do, a lot of it is, you know, looking at how the body's metabolism correlates to disease and correlates to treatments. Is that a process of trying to work with other companies that have treatments to make them better in as they meet the body, so to speak, or is it?
Yeah, so I mean, we operate in sort of a couple of different areas. First, we develop our own internal diagnostics, right? So we recognize a problem and we think our technology could add value, and we'll go in and we'll source, you know, the key experts in the world. We'll talk to them, we'll tell them about our tech. And then we'll put together like a study designed to like test that hypothesis out. So for example, our first product, which, you know, will potentially come to market in the next, you know, year or so, is for kidney transplant monitoring. So
okay.
There are about 200,000 kidney transplant people living in the US with a kidney transplant, and they all get dosed with these immunosuppressants that help the body not kick out,
not reject, you know, right.
The graft. But it's also getting too much of these immunosuppressants puts patients at risk for all these complications, infections, cancer, diabetes, heart disease. And there are really no good tools out there right now to be able to sort of monitor and mitigate those risks. So sadly, I think like a back of the envelope calculation was that like to one infection alone, about 7,500 grafts are lost every year, which translates to 3,000 deaths, which translates to $600 million being spent because these patients aren't being like monitored or, you know, like, or there's not enough tools for them for the doctors to even know how to monitor them. So we embarked on a 2-year partnership with a leading institute in Europe to access kidney transplant samples to sort of build this diagnostic that we think can really help solve this problem and like slash the deaths and slash the costs associated with this, so that like, when somebody gets a kidney transplant, which is a hard thing to get, you know, and to go through,
right,
that they can have confidence that like everything's going okay, that I don't like need to worry. And so we do that for internal products across immune response, oncology, neurodegeneration. But then, you know, we also work with pharma, right? Help them understand how their drugs work. Can we identify people who should get your drug? Can we identify people who should not get your drug? You know, how can we work together? Like, I often say the nemesis that Alaris is battling is uncertainty in treatment, right? And that come in at different levels.
And yet, I would think also the huge opportunity is that uncertainty and that people worry about. You know, if I think about even right now with the COVID vaccine, how much worry there is from a certain, you know, from a bunch of different people about whether I should get it, where I should not. There's misinformation about it. There's worry about it. And so I would think that's true of sort of anything. And it seems more and more in science that people feel that uncertainty or that fear. And I would think that with what you're doing, Alaris, that some of that is meant to combat that and to identify where it is an issue and where it isn't an issue, so that you can have more certainty that you're doing the right thing.
And people should have confidence because they're swimming around in you and I are biomarkers, biological markers that explain, you know, why you might be susceptible to certain diseases and me others. And if we got the same disease and were treated in the same way, you would have a beautiful outcome and perhaps nothing would happen to me. Like, that information is there. We just need to go measure it. And it's the same for COVID. Like, why do some people asymptomatic? You know, why are others, you know, have more severe cases? I'm on the board of the Personalized Medicine Coalition, and we got to present to Congress, you know, in the beginning of the pandemic. And that was one of the cases that we tried to make, is like, this is where personalized medicine can be really helpful, so that, again, people can have more confidence. We can get back to normal, like, sooner and things like that.
Right, right. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. So you're on that coalition. You are also on the World Economic Forum's Global Future Council of Biotechnology, which is a mouthful, but is awesome. And then I noticed that you were also part of, in 2016, back you did the United State of Women Summit as well. So you've had a lot, you know, those experiences must be you know, both influential and kind of such an honor to be a part of. First of all, it seems like, how do you find time to do it all? And yet, I'm also just interested in, you know, in that process of going from graduating Harvard with a PhD, and as you said, I don't have a lot of connections, I'm trying to start this out, to now, obviously, it seems sought after for a number of different roles. How do you manage all that?
I don't know, man. No, I'm just kidding. No. So I'll actually quote you, or, you know, the yes and improv, you know, mantra. Like, when I started Olaris, it became very clear to me that it was going to take more than just great science to, you know, push our company's mission forward, or just precision medicine in general. And so as opportunities, you know, became available to me, like, I said yes, you know. And I mean, I remember, again, early days, Olaris, being just me as the only employee, and then I would be invited by, like, you know, the PM's office in the UAE to give a talk. So I'd, like, jump on a plane, go to Dubai for 6 hours, and then, like, come back, you know. And but just to help to start making the case for why not just scientists like me, but why governments and policymakers and, you know, lay people need to care about these issues, because it could improve your life, right? Or cut healthcare costs, or whatever it is that's motivated by you. So, you know, I do it and find a way to make time for it, because it's all part of the larger mission, you know?
Right.
And it's been so helpful for me as someone, as I said, who came directly out of a lab, who truly, like, no other work experience, to just see how the world works, right? You know, just see a little bit more, like, behind Oz's curtain, let's say, of how things, you know, come together and what stakeholders you need in a room to make a decision matter. And, you know, I've been very fortunate to be involved in, like, some very incredible decision-making processes where my voice was listened to because I had all that scientific training, you know?
Right.
Yeah, so.
It's interesting. So, yeah, it's you know, we talk about, you know, it's kind of that improv thing of saying yes, and, but I think part of it is just saying yes to things. I think you're right. It's like, you know, almost like, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but yes, you know, yeah, I'll go ahead and do it and let's see what happens. Even as you were talking about starting the company, I think there's a lot of that too, that I can relate to, of that you, it's like, you're smart enough to see the opportunity and naive enough to not realize exactly
how hard this is
taking
be.
On, but courageous enough to step into the void anyway, and to put your head down and just do it. You know,
yeah.
Kudos to all the success in all those areas. It's incredible. It's great to see. So, you know, as you think of leading this, you know, leading this team of now 15 people, what excites you, or what are you kind of hopeful for in the next year or so of sort of developing that team even farther?
I'm super excited because we've just, like, brought on a lot of, like, management, right? Like, senior people who have, you know, lived and breathed and walked, you know, the walk, and are able to sort of take, you know, what we've done and are going to be able to just let us, like, leapfrog forward, right? So, you know, I'm excited on a lot of different levels. Like, success for Olaris in the next coming years will be, you know, diagnostics on the market. But then, like, our team's growth, right? Like, I have one person who started as an intern with me, and he's now, like, you know, one of our top data scientists. I tell him it is, like, my goal in life to, so that the next, like, AI conference that, you know, I get invited to speak on AI in healthcare, I don't need to go. He can go, right?
Yeah.
You can be the one. Like, I don't need to be doing all this stuff anymore. Like, and like letting the team sort of grow into those like success positions as well.
And that, what a great perspective, because then it's great, like, to go from intern to, you know, top data scientist to hopefully being able to do one of those things. I think that's also a testament, you know, to leadership, of being able to like know to kind of have that person grow and to be also excited about their growth, not just for how they help your company grow, you know?
So. Yeah. Like, and again, many of those company books that I read, like, we like review a lot at Alar. So like when somebody starts, they get a 1 month review, 3 month review, 6 month review, and then every 6 months thereafter. And we have a questionnaire that both the manager and the reviewee fill out. And, you know, it's like, what are your top successes since your last review? What are your areas of improvement? Like, rate your last quarter. But then the last two questions are, oh no, maybe there's six questions. So one is like, what do you want to accomplish next? And then it's, how can your supervisor help you? And what are your career development goals? And so like forcing everyone to articulate that like on a regular basis, I think helps them think also about the next step. All right. Like, so you tell me one day you want to be CTO. Fantastic. Right. Like, how are we going to get you on that path? And we make like, you know, again, like, so the reviewee fills it out and the manager, and then you share, right? So it gets really, it's interesting data points there.
And I would think much more, because, you know, I've worked a lot with a company called WorkHuman, who talks about the performance reviews and how sometimes they can be such a suck of time, you know, of having to put them together, of and even hearing some of how you structure it. So refreshing from rather like, here's what we think you're doing well. Here's what you need to do as improvement, and like the compliment sandwich, you know, like those sorts of things, rather than like, tell us about your successes. Tell us what you're looking to do in the future. You know, I would think that's so much more. It's, you know, it's formalized, but it's kind of that like informal feedback as well of what are you hoping for? What have you done well? How can we help you get there? I think that's refreshing to see.
We're trying. Work in progress, you know.
Well, I just remember, like, both from, you know, from my corporate background, so sort of had a corporate background when I was first out of college, and those reviews being so formal and getting a number scale and how that affected, you know, it was so stressful and at times could be demotivating, rather than what are some things that you're finding success with? How can we help you find more success? And what are you looking to do? Almost interview questions again, rather than just formalize, you know, you get an 8, you know, out of 10 or whatever, and we think you're on tracking right or whatever, you know? So
I found it super helpful, like, and just managing expectations with the team, making sure everybody's aligned, you know, like more often than not, I find the reviews like a boost, you know, for the employee, because we're aligned and we're like, all right, here's what you're doing good. Fix these little things. Like, let's tweak this. And then you can be off to the path to success. And then when there is a problem, these reviews catch them earlier, right? You know, and so you can hopefully resolve them and get people back on track.
So I think that's great. So one thing we haven't touched on that I sort of read up about you that I think is really interesting is the nonprofit that you founded. So, you know, so when I first kind of found out that you did a nonprofit, in my mind is probably, oh, it's something to do with biotech or something to do with that. And, you know, it's Proyecto Chispa. Is that how you say it? Like, I'm probably completely butchering the name of it.
Like, my Spanish is pretty poor too, but I believe it's Proyecto Chispa.
Chispa. Yeah. See, I took French in high school, so I'm awful. So Proyecto Chispa. So and that recycles electronics and provides computer centers to orphanages around the world. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, so I started this, I don't remember now, 5 years ago or something more, and when I was in grad school. So I sponsor a little girl at an orphanage in Mexico, and I went down to visit her once. And of course, like the dutiful grad student I was, I had my laptop with me and was, you know, crunching data analysis on the side. And I remember, you know, she was excited to like see the laptop, and then I let her like play with it, you know, and she was, you know, in like maybe like sixth grade or something. I don't remember again. It's all a blur, you know. I was like, what? Like, you don't know how to use a laptop, or, you know, or like, what do you guys do for computers at school? And, you know, she kind of like let me know that like, access to technology was limited. And then when I got back to Harvard, like, we have old computers as like doorstops, right? You know, like, as soon as it runs out of, you know, whatever computational power we need, it's obsolete. And I just got this idea that was like, all right, if we could get these computers that are of no value to us down to like kids, you know, like Anna, like it could be transformative. Like to be competitive in today's world, you need to know how to use a computer and things like that. So my dorky grad student compatriots and I banded together to set up a program that would ship computers down to these orphanages. We then got in trouble with customs, which, because apparently that's like a no-go.
Get the head, get the red tape going, right?
Yeah, so then we had to shift and like formalize a little bit and became a nonprofit, where we like did, we changed the model where we ran like e-waste drives, electronic waste drives, and then sold the scrap metal and then like gave the orphanage like a check to buy a computer like in the home country. So we've done this again, Mexico, Haiti, the DR, and Nepal. They just built one very, very recently. So, I mean, I like it for multiple reasons. I'm an eco-friendly nut, you know. I'm a tech fan, obviously. And to me, this is like one way to like create like a sustainable loop, right? You know,
I think I love it. And I also it's more and more struck me, I think, particularly with COVID, the importance of having access to a computer and, you know, beyond that, I mean, with the internet and everything, just and how bigger the disadvantage can be for people who don't have access to all those resources. So and I am an eco-friendly nut as well. So like recycling all that stuff that could be poisoning things everywhere,
right,
is, you know, it seems like a win-win-win-win kind of all around. So so that's great.
Yeah, I will say Chispa took a little bit of a pause, like because Olaris has been crazy. But one of my goals for this year is to like revamp it and start setting up some more drives because it was crazy with COVID and then Olaris just previously of how to get this all organized. So we've been a little bit quiet, but we're coming back strong.
But that's great. Thank you so much for doing this. I know, like, obviously you were super busy and both personally and with everything going on. I really appreciate taking the time.
It's awesome. And whatever I can do to help. And again, like we were thinking with more people too, I was like, we've been thinking about just doing some team bonding. So separately, I'll probably follow up with you about that. So.
I'd love to do it, especially after hearing kind of what your core values are and everything. I think it would be, I'd love to do it. I can, like, how many people did you hire and your only connection was Zoom?
Yeah. At least five or six. Like, and so we did at Christmas, it was really interesting. Like, you know, we had a holiday party and we got everybody tickets to take like their car through one of those like light show things, right? So it was socially distanced, so you didn't have to interact or whatever, but like we met in like a Stop and Shop parking lot like before, you know, and gave everybody their tickets, and it was the first time that many people saw each other in person, and it was wild because it was like, oh my God, you're so tall, or like, you know, like things like that. Like, cause we didn't see these people, you know. Yeah. But it was really, really nice. So yeah, I'm looking forward to
I miss that the most, because even in the virtual stuff that we do, I mean, it still has been effective and people we've gotten good, you know, reviews from it and everything, but I just like being in the room because you can feel you can feel the presence of people and you can, you know, you can almost see those aha moments or whatever, or you get that, you say something and you see the impact, whereas seeing a screen with 12 people on it or 20 people on it or 50 people on it, I can't get a read on the room, you know, and I'm so used to being live and getting all that constant feedback, particularly in the type of stuff we do. So I agree. I can't wait to be back sort of and just interact again with people. You know?
All right, my friend. Well, thank you for this opportunity. I'm really thrilled we got a chance to touch base.
Yeah, well, good luck with everything.
Thank you, my friend.
All right, take care. All right.
See ya.